replied. Stirring my coffee, I replied, "Well, I appreciate the hospitality." "If you drank it like a grown-up, you wouldn't need that crap," Sarge admonished, with a scowl on his face. Then he added, "Ruining a perfectly good cup of coffee." "Yeah, sucking dick is an acquired taste, too, but I prefer not to acquire it," I replied. Then, realizing what I'd said, looked around for Michelle. Mitch laughed at me. "She's upstairs." "Phew," I replied. "Sorry about that."
"Don't worry about it."
"Mind your manners," Sarge barked. "I can't take you nowhere." "So, to what do I owe the pleasure of this visit?" Mitch asked. "I wanted to see the latest sad image. We need to take a little trip, but I wanted to see what the storm looks like first," I replied. "I have one that's a couple hours old," he replied, as he got up. "Looks like it fell apart. It's not nearly as well formed as it was." He returned with a stack of images and started laying them out in chronological order. Pointing to one of the older ones, he said, "You can see here it looked like an eye was about to form. But it hit this black area here. That's high pressure, dry air. That really put a damper on it."
"That's good," Sarge said, as he inspected the images.
Pointing at the newest one, I said, "Maybe. But look at this mess coming off the coast of Africa." Mitch nodded.
"Yeah, that one's pretty nasty, but it's 10 days or so away."
"Maybe that high pressure will stick around and turn it," Ted said.
"No," Mitch replied, pointing at the image again. "The high pressure is moving to the west, pulling this storm with it. We're going to have this rain for about 3 days, I'm thinking.
If this ridge moves on off further to the west, it'll open the door for the next one." Sarge looked at him.
"You some kind of meteorologist?"
Mitch smiled.
"It's a hobby."
"He's the only weatherman we have," I added.
"So aside from the rain, we should be good for at least the next week?" Sarge asked.
Mitch nodded in agreement.
"Looks that way."
The old man got to his feet.
"We appreciate the hospitality. Tell your lovely wife hello for us. But we've got work to do and need to get going."
Mitch asked what we were doing, and we shared it with him, making sure he understood not to share the info with Sheffield.
"Oh, I never talk to him. I usually work with Shane and Sean. He stays out of our business," Mitch replied.
"As it should be," Sarge replied with a nod. Mitch walked us out to the truck where we said our goodbyes, with handshakes all around. He told us that if anyone up our way needed anything, to please let him know. I thanked him for the offer and told him I'd pass it on. Then we were back in the truck and headed home.
"We'll drop you off at your place, Morgan," Sarge said. "I'll get those guardsmen sorted, and we'll get loaded. You pack a bag, and we'll come pick you up.
Be sure to let those guys know where to eat. Tell them if they need anything, to get with Thad. He's Jefe as far as they're concerned."
"Leave the army shit to me," he replied dismissively.
I snorted and shook my head, turning my attention back to the rain outside. It was a miserable day, though it was a reprieve from the heat. But that would be compensated for. When the sun came back out and began to burn the water off, it'd be like living in a sauna. We rolled into the neighborhood and Ted took me to my house. Pulling into my driveway, Sarge turned his head and said,
"Get your shit together. We'll be back in a little while."
As I opened the door, before the truck even stopped, I replied,
"I'll be ready."
I pulled my poncho off on the porch before going in. No sense in making a mess inside. Mel was lying on the couch. Little Bit was on the floor with paint spread out in front of her and papers scattered around her. Taylor and Leanne were on the floor in front of the fireplace watching a movie on the iPad. They were sharing a set of earbuds, each having one stuck in an ear.
I leaned over the back of the couch and kissed Mel on the head.
I have to go pack. They'll be ready to go soon.
She scrunched into the pillow she was lying on and replied,
I already packed you a bag. It's on the bed.
I looked into the bedroom to see my bag sitting at the foot of the bed.
Thanks. Then I can just chill out with you guys for a little while.
Where are you going? Little Bit asked.
To see some army people.
How long are you going to be gone?
I got down on the floor beside her.
Not long. What you painting?
A school. That's the teacher, and that's the blackboard.
It's a nice-looking school.
I looked at her and asked, You miss school?
She shrugged.
A little, I guess. I miss my friends. I miss having kids to play with.
I roughed her hair.
You will again someday.
Hey, she shouted as she patted her hair back down. I sat up and leaned against the couch. Mel put her arm around me, and I rested my head on it. I fell asleep there and woke up when I heard a horn. Little Bit was patting my leg, saying, Daddy, Mr. Sarge is here.
I smiled at her and pulled her into my lap. I guess I have to go.
I hugged her tight.
I love you.
She wrapped her arms around my neck and squeezed as tight as she could, grunting as she strained.
I love you too. Ah, you're going to pop my head off, I cried.
She laughed and I tickled her.
Be good for mommy.
I will, she replied and kissed me on the cheek. I crawled over to the girls and lay in front of them, putting my hand on the iPad. When they looked up, I said,
See you two later.
Can we come? Leanne asked.
No, you're going to have to help out here.
We never get to do anything fun, Taylor replied.
Be good for mom and help out.
We will, Leanne replied. Mel was waiting by the door with my bag. She handed it to me and said, Get back home in one piece. I kissed her and replied, I will. Promise. I put a bunch of that jerky in there for you. I leaned in and hugged her, giving her another kiss. Thanks, babe.
Chapter 4 Sarge was standing on the porch when I came out.
I was about to knock on the door.
I was coming, calm down.
He pointed to the Hummer and said,
You drive.
Grunting, I replied,
What happened to sleep on the way?
Improvise, adapt, overcome.
What, you a Marine now?
As I got in on the driver's side, he replied,
Question my heritage like that again, and this'll get ugly.
Dalton was sitting in the back seat, and in his famous Cockney accent shouted,
Top of the morning to you, Governor.
I looked over my shoulder at him and asked,
What the hell are you so chipper about?
Just glad to be alive.
I asked Sarge, Which way are we going?
Let's try and take I-75. It'll be a lot faster. And with this weather, maybe it'll keep the slow-thinking types from trying anything.
That just means any we do come up against are committed to their endeavors, Dalton added.
Sarge pointed, and I put the truck in gear and pulled out as he replied,
We'll just have to show them the flaw in their logic then.
As we passed the bunker, I saw it was manned by the guardsmen we had picked up yesterday. At least here they had a tarp to get under, out of the rain. They waved as we passed, and it made me wonder if they were unhappy at not getting to go, or relieved they got to stay behind. Or if they even knew what we were up to, for that matter.
You tell those guys what we're doing? I asked.
Sarge shook his head.
Nope. They don't need to know.
I drove down 19 and hung a right onto 42. It was a straight shot to Highway 441 in Summerfield.
just like 19 that we drove often. This one was clogged with debris. Nothing the trucks couldn't handle, but the absence of traffic and maintenance was obvious. Tree debris littered the road. Piles of leaves, twigs, sticks, and some large limbs were everywhere. Dirt was also piled in places where it had been washed in by the rains. This was magnified by the rain we were currently experiencing, as rivers of water ran along the sides and crossed anywhere the pitch of the road changed. But it was an easy drive, and I wasn't particularly worried about being waylaid. The rain, this volume of rain anyway, would surely keep people inside. It had rained all night, and only the most dedicated would be watching the roads. And it wouldn't be particularly profitable for them either, as their potential victims would also be seeking shelter. So I relaxed and settled into the drive. The fact the Hummer was up-armored certainly helped. We made it to Summerfield without seeing anyone on the road. I spotted a couple of faces watching us from porches as we passed by, but that was the entire sum of people, and they made no effort at action of any sort. It was an odd sensation to turn out onto Highway 441 with no traffic. It was a major artery and had always been busy, but today it was empty, save the abandoned cars lining the sides of the road. "Wonder who pushed all the cars out of the road?" I asked no one in particular. Sarge was looking out his window and dismissively replied, "Who cares? But I'm glad they did." As we passed the Camping World on the left side of the road, I noticed something. "There isn't a single towable camper over there," I said. Sarge looked over. "Makes sense. People with trucks that still ran came up here and cleaned them out. Probably sitting in the Ocala forest now with dead bodies inside of them." "I'm sure some are," Dalton added. "These woods down here aren't very hospitable to man or beast." The only things on the lot were the RVs, most of which sat with their hoods and doors open to the elements, doomed to rot away from exposure to wind, rain, and critters. I could just imagine bird nests being built in them, or worse yet, wasp nests in profusion, waiting on some poor, unsuspecting soul to make the mistake of poking their head in. But there was one with the awning pitched. Maybe someone was living there, though in the heat of the summer, it would be hell stuck out in the middle of an asphalt lot. But our ideas of comfort had changed. No longer could we so radically alter the environment to suit us. We were now as much a part of the natural world as the wild animals. If it was hot, we sought shade. If it rained, we sought shelter. But there was no air conditioning. We could still make heat, but we could not make cold, except in very limited amounts, such as the fridge. The thought of keeping an entire home at 72 degrees was as likely as walking on the moon at this point. After making the turn onto County Highway 484, it wasn't long before I-75 came into view. The truck stops lining the approach to the interstate were a sad sight. Trash of every kind filled their parking lots. The doors either stood open or shattered, sometimes both. Wind-blown piles of paper and plastic bottles formed heaps at the edges of curbs. Litter was everywhere. I guess the first thing to go in a crisis is the concern for one's trash. But then, without service to haul it away, where is it supposed to go? The apparent answer is, wherever you drop it. I swung on to the on-ramp and looked in the mirror to make sure everyone was still there. Of course, I'd have known if there had been any trouble. I-75 was lined with cars. Fortunately, the drivers of most of them had made their way to the side of the road when their cars stalled and weren't blocking the travel lanes.
"Keep it at about 45, Sarge said, as he leaned back and put his foot up on the dash.
You know, the only people I've seen do that are teenage girls, I replied. Sarge grabbed his crotch. I've got your teenage girl right here. Then Dalton's leg shot out between the seats and thumped down on the tunnel cover between us. The old man cocked an eye at it, briefly, before seizing the foot under his arm. Dalton nearly kicked me into the windshield when he used the back of my seat as leverage in order to snatch the trapped foot from the old man, all the while laughing uproariously. When he finally got it free, Sarge said, "Stick it up here again, Gulliver, and I'll cut it off." The radio crackled, and Mike said, "We need a piss break." "Go ahead and stop," Sarge said. I stopped the truck in the middle of the road, not bothering to pull over. Getting out, I stretched and pulled my poncho on. It was still raining pretty good, and I looked back at the MRAP, which was at the rear of the column. I could see the Browning M2 swiveling around as someone inside scanned the road. "Set up security," Sarge barked. I walked to the front of the Hummer and leaned against the fender. Rain pelted the poncho as I tried to look out to the tree line at the edge of the road. It was obscured by the rain, low cloud ceiling, and dim light. All I could see was a gray haze. But the way I figured it, if I couldn't see over to it, anyone there couldn't see me either. But looking up, it was obvious that the odds of anyone being out were slim. "Saddle up," Sarge called out. I looked back to see everyone headed for their trucks and made my way to the driver's door and pulled the poncho off. Getting in, I wadded it up and laid it on the floor in front of my seat. That's the problem with these things. When you take them off, they're soaked, and you're only somewhat drier. We continued on our way, making decent time. Although I was continuously doing the math in my head about how far we had to go and how we were doing, it was going to take forever to get there, and that's provided there were no issues. And everything was fine until we came to the outskirts of Gainesville. Just south of town, on I-75, the interstate is bordered on both sides by a rest area. They sat just past the Payne's Prairie Preserve and made a good buffer for traffic coming north. And it was at this point that we encountered the first roadblock. Several cars were pushed into the travel lanes, and some of the trees in the rest areas were dropped to block the shoulder. With guardrails bordering the center median, it made it virtually impassable. "Stop here," Sarge said. "Get up on that mini-me, Gulliver." Dalton wedged himself up into the turret. Sarge keyed the mic and said, "Teddy, get on that electronic eyeball and let me know what you see."
"On it, boss."
I squinted to see, but it was futile. The rain battered the windshield, and the anemic wipers could hardly keep up. Sarge reached over and pushed my face, saying, "Look out there, numbnuts. Teddy's got an eyeball up ahead." I looked out the side window and replied, "You need to stop being a dick."
"I second that," Dalton called from the turret.
After what seemed like forever, Ted called back.
"Looks deserted, boss."
Sarge sat for a moment, tapping the mic on his leg.
"Pull around and go check that rest area out. We'll cover you from here."
"Moving,"
Ted replied. The MRAP came around us and headed towards the exit. The truck rolled slowly up the ramp as we sat and watched. The big truck would move up a few feet and pause, then move up again. It did this repeatedly until it was finally sitting in the parking lot.
"What's the word, Teddy?" Sarge asked.
"We had a couple of bodies squirt out the back, but it looks like this has been abandoned for some time now."
"Safe for us to move up?"
"Looks that way. We'll drive out the other side. I'll let you know if we see anything."
"We'll wait for your call."
It didn't take Ted long to call back with the all clear. We had to go up the ramp
and into the rest area to get around the roadblock. The rest area was a total mess. Trash, clothes, and heaps of debris were everywhere. The vending machines had been dragged out into the parking lot and stood up with sheets of plywood laid across the tops to create a shelter of sorts. A couple of rusting barrels sat by piles of wood. It was obvious that this location was manned for a long time.
"Look at that," Sarge said, pointing out the window.
He was motioning towards a large pile of clothes, shoes, and assorted personal items. Several types of cheap backpacks and messenger-type bags were mixed in.
"That doesn't look good," I said.
"That's nothing," Dalton called out. "Check out your 11 o'clock. A tree at the edge of the parking lot was festooned with women's undergarments, like some sort of garish Christmas tree. We all knew what it meant.
"There's been some evil shit going on here," Sarge said.
"Yeah. Just think of all those college kids trying to get out of here," I replied. Sarge grunted.
"I hope we run across the bastards."
"That's not our mission. We've got shit to do, and it doesn't include trying to restore order to the city of Gainesville."
I know,
Sarge replied, waving me off. He nodded forward.
"Go on. Let's get a move on."
I pulled past the MRAP and assumed the lead of the convoy again. But as bad as the rain was, it worked in our favor and kept people sheltered, which allowed us to make it through Gainesville without seeing another soul. And that was how much of the trip went. It was just mile after monotonous, rainy mile.
"Wish we had a radio,"
I said, as Lake City was coming into view. Dalton, who was back in his seat now, leaned forward and asked, rather excitedly,
"You want me to sing?"
He started to clear his throat as Sarge pointed over his shoulder at him, replying,
"Don't even think about it."
Dalton slumped, but he perked right up and said, "Yeah, you're right. You're a much better singer than I am. You go." Sarge turned slowly in his seat. I had to laugh, because as the old man swiveled in his seat, Dalton leaned away at the same speed. And Dalton was nearly as bad as Mike. When the old man started to turn around, Dalton again leaned forward. Sarge quickly looked back over his shoulder, and Dalton instantly sat back. I laughed out loud, and Sarge shook his head.
"Why am I always surrounded by assholes?" he asked.
"You're just lucky that way," I replied, as I swung the truck onto the I-10 ramp. Sarge nodded.
"At least we're on I-10 now, getting closer."
I looked at my watch. It was already afternoon. "It'll be dark before we get there."
"What do you care? You wanted to drive in the dark."
"Just making an observation, you old prick." Sarge looked at me for a minute.
"We can move faster now. Speed up."
"Why is this piece of asphalt any safer than the one we just got off of?" Dalton asked. Sarge rocked in his seat.
"Because the army is in full control of this piece."
He pulled a fluorescent orange marker panel from a pocket and handed it to Dalton.
"Get your ass up in that hole, Gulliver. Hold this up so we don't get our asses shot off."
Dalton wormed his way into the turret and held the panel over his head with both hands. It flapped in the wind as we rolled forward. We were still coming around the ramp as it swung to the west. As the interstate proper came into view, so did a couple of armored vehicles. I instantly slowed. "Staring down a large caliber gun will do that to you." Sarge pointed and said,
"Keep going. Just take it slow. They're expecting us."
As we approached the overpass of the southbound lanes of I-75, I saw several uniformed men standing under it. They were all armed, but non-threatening, as they waved us forward. As we rolled up to them, men approached the Hummer from both sides. Sarge opened his door
and the young man standing there nodded at him and greeted him.
Afternoon, Top.
Sarge got out and shook the man's hand.
How's it going?
He asked. I got out as the two men talked and looked around. A large tent was set up under the overpass, banked with sandbags. There were several other sandbag emplacements as well. It looked to me like a well-prepared defense. The young soldier standing on my side was rocking back and forth on his heels. I looked at him and asked,
"How's it going?"
He shrugged and looked up.
"Rain keeps the shitheads away.
You guys see a lot of action here?"
"We take a lot of pot shots. Thankfully, these dipshits can't shoot for shit. There was one guy that was pretty good. He'd come out every day at the same time and crack off a round. He hit a couple people. Thankfully, we all wear these."
He wrapped his knuckles on the Kevlar helmet sitting on his head.
"What happened to him? He just quit coming out to play?"
He smiled.
"No. He came out at nearly the same time every day. We finally just laid an ambush and schwacked his ass."
"Schwack 'em,"
Ted shouted from where he stood by the MRAP. After a moment, Sarge was twirling a finger in the air and shouting,
"Mount up!"
I nodded to the young soldier I was talking to and climbed back into the Hummer. Once Sarge was in, we pulled off as the soldiers waved.
"So the road is clear all the way?"
I asked. Sarge nodded.
"Yep. Put your foot into it. Let's roll."
And so, while it was a long ride, it was a completely uneventful one. I marked the trip by noting the passing of landmarks I recognized. Exits to places like Live Oak, Madison, Monticello, and then Tallahassee. Getting to Tallahassee always gave a false sense of coming to the end of your trip. But Eglin was still a very long way ahead, just a stone's throw from Alabama. As the road signs told me we were getting closer to Tallahassee, I started looking for exit 217. It wouldn't be much farther ahead. Passing the 216-mile marker, I slowed a bit and used the sleeve of my shirt to wipe the window. The sky was still gray, and the falling rain made everything outside look like the sky. But after passing the exit, I saw the little Ford sitting right where I'd left it. Its silver paint blended into the surrounding murk, but it was there.
"What are you looking at?"
Sarge asked, as he grabbed the wheel and pulled the Hummer back into the center of the road.
"That's my car back there. That's where I was when this shit all started."
Sarge looked over his shoulder.
"No shit. Damn. You were one hell of a long way from home."
"Want me to shoot it?"
Dalton asked from the back seat. Sarge swiveled in his seat, giving Dalton a look and shaking his head. Dalton shrugged.
"Just offering."
We passed several other checkpoints on our travel, but in Tallahassee, there was a much larger presence. Here, too, we were waved through, not bothering to stop. As we came out the other side of Tallahassee, I slowed to a stop in the road. Sarge looked at me and asked,
"What's wrong?"
"I need a break," I said.
"I'll spell you,"
Dalton said as he climbed out. Sarge got out and stretched, then told Ted to fuel all the trucks.
"No sense in wasting the stop."
"Roger that, boss,"
he replied, as he headed back towards the MRAP. I walked to the front of the truck and took a long piss. When I turned around, Sarge was leaning on his door and asked,
"You done now?"
I lifted my leg and farted loudly.
"Am now,"
I replied with a smile. He just shook his head.
"You're getting as bad as Mike."
"We've had this discussion already," I replied, then looked around. "You know, this makes me feel good."
"What, pissing and shitting yourself in the rain?"
"No."
I waved a hand at the road. "Being out here knowing there's nothing to worry about, that the military is taking control of this area." He nodded.
I'm honestly surprised they've come out as far as they have.
I laughed.
Hell, I wish they'd come a little farther.
Well, a lot farther.
Sarge grunted.
Why?
You've got us.
Now I grunted. Yeah, you really instill confidence.
Sarge looked sideways at me before looking back over his shoulder.
I'm going to go supervise this goat rope, or we'll never get out of here.
Get him in line, I replied, as he walked off.
It didn't take long for me to hear Sarge shouting and cussing. It made me laugh. The sounds of his old ass raising hell, Mike and Ian cussing him back, and metal drums scraping and banging, making enough noise to wake the dead. It made me wonder if he really was helping. I heard an empty drum hit the road and turned back to see it rolling into the median. I walked back to where the chaos was taking place and asked Sarge if we should keep the drum.
Nah, he replied. We need the room. We're going to be bringing a fuel tank back with us.
How the hell are we going to pull that? I asked.
Sarge looked at me quizzically and asked,
Who said anything about pulling it?
He looked back at the guys and Jamie and shouted,
Saddle up! We still got a long way to go!
In a deep sing-song voice and mimicking an air guitar, Mike replied,
And a short time to get there.
Sarge just shook his head and stomped off. I followed him back to the truck with Dalton. He was wiping his hands on a rag.
Damn, diesel fuel stinks.
Not as bad as gasoline.
Dalton got into the driver's seat, and I climbed into the back seat and pulled my bag over as he pulled off. I fished around inside and found the biltong that Mel had packed for me. I was starving and quickly unwrapped the dish towel she had placed it in and took out a piece and took a big bite. It looked like she packed all of it, as there was a lot. I handed a piece up front. Dalton quickly grabbed it, and I handed another piece up.
What's this?
Sarge asked as he took it.
Biltong from that cow.
No shit. I remember you talking about it.
He took a bite and nodded.
Not bad. Pretty close to the real thing.
It is the real thing. How can it not be the real thing? I asked. It's dry meat. He clamped his teeth down on the piece of meat and pulled. Getting a piece, he replied.
'Cause it ain't the same.
You'd bitch if you were hung with a new rope.
I'd bitch if I was hung with a rope made from the pubic hair of virgins, Sarge barked. The result is the same. Dead.
I chewed on the dried meat and stared out the window. I was thankful I drove as far as I did and that it had not been necessary for me to climb up into the turret. Not that it was that different as rain dripped and spattered in through the opening as it was, but it was still better than sitting in that web sling. The sun was beginning to set when we rolled into Destin. I was surprised by the number of people I saw on the streets. The reason was revealed when the gates to the base came into view, and I saw a stream of civilians coming out. I guess they were working on base in some capacity. It only made sense. With so much of our military forward deployed, to use the preferred term, overseas, there was a lack of manpower. And with so many able-bodied men and women around, who would happily work for food for themselves and their families, it was an easy choice. Not to mention, the only one. Two Stryker fighting vehicles flanked the gates to the base, as well as a number of large HESCO barriers, preferred by today's military. These preformed concrete wall sections could be interlocked to form a solid wall. And here they did just that. We had to zigzag our way up to the gates as the HESCOs prevented a direct approach. Dalton pulled up to the gate and stopped. An MP in full battle rattle leaned in when Dalton opened the door.
First Sergeant Mitchell here to see General Fawcett. We've been expecting you, Top. Glad to see you made it without any issues.
I'll have someone escort you to the general. The MP looked at Dalton and said, "Please turn off your headlights." And he promptly stepped away, shouting orders. Dalton closed the door and looked at Sarge, asking, "You haven't used the radio all day. How did they know when to expect us?"
"'Cause I told them when we'd be here. We were maintaining radio discipline."
"Why'd they have us turn the headlights off?" I asked.
"So no one can see us in the dark. Good way for aircraft to mark you as a target."
I rocked my head against the bulletproof window. The old man never ceased to amaze me. He did some things as if by magic, just made them happen. I guess he was always operating behind the scenes, but that would make sense. An NCO of his rank would be used to such methods. There were no lights on anywhere. The base was blacked out. But since it wasn't fully dark, Dalton could easily see the truck in front of him. We weaved through the base for a while before coming to typical government-looking buildings with a brick facade. The truck in front of us stopped, and the driver quickly got out. Everyone piled out and started stretching. Sarge told them to hang out by the trucks and told Ted and me to follow him. We went inside the building and down a hallway past an open door. It appeared to be a conference room crowded with people leaning over a large table covered with maps. A large map of the state of Florida was projected on a screen at the head of the table as well. I noted the general was there, but we weren't invited into this particular meeting. Instead, we were led to a small reception room of sorts and asked to take a seat. Sarge immediately spotted a coffee pot sitting on a small cabinet and helped himself without asking. Ted did likewise, and I figured, what the hell, when in Rome, and poured myself one as well and sat back down.
"What, no training wheels?" Sarge asked.
"It's been a long day. Shouldn't your old ass be tired?" I asked.
"I am. That's why I'm drinking this,"
Sarge replied, holding the styrofoam cup up. I spent a minute marveling at the cup in my hand. It had been a while since I'd seen one. Something so common, so nondescript. But at the moment, it was kind of nostalgic.
"It's the cup, isn't it?"
Ted asked, apparently reading my thoughts. I looked up and nodded.
"Yeah. Just trying to remember when the last time I saw one was."
Sarge looked at his and said,
"This thing? This ain't nothing. I drink coffee from my boot right now."
I let out a loud breath.
"You're missing the point." "And just what is the point?"
"When was the last time you saw one of these?" Ted asked.
Sarge shrugged.
"Hell if I know. I don't remember the last time I saw dog shit either."
That got a laugh from Ted and me both. And the more we laughed, the more we laughed. Until even Sarge was laughing. When the general finally walked in the room, he stopped in his tracks and looked at all of us. No one bothered to get up. I didn't expect Sarge to, but thought Ted might, but he kept his ass firmly in his seat.
"Do I want to know?"
Fawcett asked.
Sarge held the cup up and replied, "Cups, just cups."
"And dog shit," I added.
Fawcett shook his head and replied,
"You guys have been in the wilderness too long. Come on in," he added,
as he went into his office. We followed him into the office where I slumped into a chair in the corner, while Ted and Sarge took the seats in front of the desk. Fawcett sat down behind his desk and stared at it for a minute. It was covered with paper. Forms, images, maps, all sorts of things were spread out. He rubbed his temples. The man looked tired. More than that, he looked drained, totally consumed. He was obviously overworked, and it was starting to show. He looked up and smiled.
"How are your folks faring, Linus?"
"We're holding our own. It's harvest time, so we're bringing in crops. Things are starting to look up."
Sarge shifted in his seat. Or it was, that is. Fawcett looked back at the desk and nodded grimly.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
Looking back up, he continued. It was a calculated risk. We knew when we hit the Chinese, they would retaliate.
What did we lose there?
A lot, but not as much as we would have had we not moved most of the resources. But it was still a tremendous loss. Sarge nodded as Fawcett spoke.
Yes, it was.
What's it look like on the ground in the Tampa area now?
It'll be uninhabitable for 100 years, Fawcett replied.
He then looked at his desk, sorting through the papers. Finding one, he held it up and read from it. As he did, he said,
Tell me about the run-in with the armor.
We were out doing a recon and came across them sitting on top of an overpass. They had a good field of view. It was a perfect spot. We hit one with a goose, but took a round into the ass of one of our trucks.
Fawcett looked back at the sheet in his hand. One KIA?
Sarge nodded.
Do you know who they were?
Cubans. Fawcett nodded.
Yeah, figured as much. The Russians are teaming up with them. Fortunately, there aren't that many Russians here. It's a long ride for them.
One is too many, Ted added.
Fawcett dropped the paper to his desk.
Well, there shouldn't be too many more. The Navy has started sinking any ships approaching Cuba. The USS Albany and Helena are down there, wreaking havoc on shipping.
What are those? I asked.
Fawcett looked at me, smiled, and nodded.
Good to see you again, Sheriff.
They're Los Angeles-class fast-attack subs, hunter killers.
So, what do you need from us? Sarge asked. Fawcett sat back in his chair and ran his fingers through his hair. That was probably grayer than he wanted it to be. Letting out a breath, he picked up a file folder and opened it.
Top, we've identified a few sites we'd like your people to prosecute. They're staging areas. We know there are Russian and Cuban forces there.
He looked up.
But as you can imagine, we're spread a little thin.
Why don't you just bomb them with planes or drones? I asked.
All air assets are tied up flying cap. Combat air patrol, he added, as though I didn't understand.
I know what it means.
He brushed off my reply and continued.
We just can't support those kinds of operations. Only time a plane is used in a ground attack mode is if we have troops in contact. And even then, it has to be an emergency. The days of the unlimited use of force are over. Simply put, we have to triage what's more important, and at the moment, it's making sure that unfriendly aircraft are not in the skies overhead.
Are we getting any support on that? Sarge asked.
Fawcett nodded. The Canadians are helping. They've stabilized their southern border that was affected, and they've cranked up the aid now. We are literally getting tons of support from them every day. The Brits are helping as well, as are the Aussies. That's about it.
Sounds like a lot to me, I replied.
Sarge shifted in his seat. I guess I was getting on his nerves, but I wasn't done.
That's good, General.
Can you spare some for the poor people of Lake County? We need aid as well.
Sarge swiveled in his chair and looked at me, but Fawcett was unfazed.
It's okay, Top, Fawcett said, before turning his attention back to me.
Of course, Sheriff. We will give until it hurts. What sort of things do you need?
I reached into my vest and pulled out a write-in-the-rain notebook and tore a page out. I'd made a list of things while sitting in the back seat. No doubt I had missed things, but it was a long list. I handed the paper to Fawcett. He looked at it, and his eyebrows went up.
You know I can't accommodate all this, right?
I nodded.
Just give until it hurts, General.
He nodded, and a thin smile cracked his face. Picking up a radio on his desk, he made a call.
Jim, can you come in here, please?
There was a terse reply, and moments later, a man with gold oak leaves on a pressed uniform came in. Fawcett held out the list and said, "Jim, can you go to supply and see what we can do about the sheriff's shopping list?" Taking the list, he replied, "Of course." He looked at me and held a hand towards the door. "After you, Sheriff." "Take the truck. Leave the MRAP here," Sarge said as I got to the door. I nodded and followed Jim.
"Just follow me," Jim said as we went outside. "Keep the headlights off."
Jamie and Ian were standing beside the truck, talking.
"Let's follow him," I told Jamie.
I climbed up in the cab and sat in the middle seat, and Jamie drove. She seemed to have a thing for driving. Maybe it was the novelty of it now. Jamie followed Jim's Hummer as it wound its way through the base, eventually stopping at a large warehouse-type building. Jim stopped his truck and ran back to tell Jamie to back up to a loading dock on the side of the building. She did as instructed. As she pulled the air brake on, she asked, "What's this all about?" Waiting for Ian to get out, I replied,
"We're going shopping."
"Something you're good at," Ian joked as he opened the door.
"Really?" Jamie asked, with a very serious look on her face. "That's what I'm good at? Shopping? Shopping is what I'm good at?" Her head bobbed with every word. The joke faded from his face, and he half moaned,
"I'm sorry."
Jamie threw her door open and replied,
"Oh, you just think you are now."
She jabbed a finger in his face. "But I can promise you, you will be." She then jumped down from the truck. Ian and I both looked at one another.
"That woman is scary," I said. "I fear for your safety."
Ian nodded.
"So do I."
We walked through a side door and into a cavernous warehouse. The space was brightly lit and was bustling with activity. I looked around, curious about why I didn't notice any light from the outside. There were windows high up on the walls and skylights in the ceiling, but all were covered to black them out. Forklifts seemed to be everywhere, as well as people pulling pallet jacks around. The opposite side of the building, from where we parked, was a continuous line of large roll-up loading doors. At each one sat a large truck that was being loaded.
"I parked you on the unloading side. There are no deliveries coming in tonight. The events in Tampa have made it a little more difficult to get cargo here."
Jamie looked at the pallet racks that went nearly to the ceiling and asked, "Where is all this stuff coming from?"
"Canada, England, and Australia," I replied.
Jim looked at me.
"How the hell do you know that?"
"Fawcett told me."
Jim nodded.
"Oh, of course. But yeah, our allies have begun shipping aid. Canada, of course, sends the most. But Australia and England are sending considerable tonnage, too."
"What kind of stuff is here?" Ian asked.
Jim motioned for another man to join them.
"This is Buck. This is his warehouse. Buck, can you share with them what's in here?"
"All this is humanitarian aid. Food, hygiene, medical supplies, that kind of thing."
Jim handed Buck the list, saying, "Here's what they're looking for." Buck looked at the list.
"We have all this," he looked up and asked.
"There are no amounts here. How much are you looking for?"
"The general said you'd give until it hurts." "What'd you bring to carry all this?"
"A 5-ton truck with a 5-ton trailer," Jamie said.
Buck shrugged. "I'll see what I can do."
"Anything we can do to help?" I asked.
"Nah, just stay out of the way. We'll get it. There's a break room back there. Go help yourselves."
"Anyone for a cup of coffee?" I asked.
"Coffee?" Jamie asked, as she turned and started towards the break room. The break room was just what you'd expect. There were several people there, mainly civilians from the look of them. They watched us as we excitedly poured coffee, and to their utter amazement, each of our group grabbed a double handful of doughnuts before taking a seat. Jamie's eyes rolled back in her head as she took a bite of one she dunked in her coffee. "Oh my God," she said. "I never thought I'd see another one of these." Ian stuffed an entire glazed doughnut in his mouth and replied,
"I know, we've never,"
blowing crumbs out as he tried to talk. I took my time. I'd mixed creamer and sugar into my cup and luxuriously dunked the doughnut in and taken a bite. I savored every moment, every part of the act, dunking the pastry, then tapping it on the rim of the cup as a drop would fall back in. I took all of it in. Such a silly thing, but for me, it was the highest of treats. A woman came and sat down at our table. She watched, smiling at us. I picked up another donut and dunked it. "They're good, huh?" she said. I nodded as I tapped it on the rim of the cup. "Yes, they are. I'm amazed to see them." "So was I the first time. I ate so many the first day I got sick." Jamie wiped her mouth with the back of her hand and asked, "How long have you been here?"
"Almost a month. Where are you guys from?"
"Lake County, down south," Ian replied. "You kind of look like you're in the army," she said. Then she looked at me and added, "But then you don't." I was looking down at my cup and glanced up at her. "I'm not." Then I pointed with the pastry across the table at Jamie and Ian. "But they are." "Kind of," Jamie said. "Kind of," I added with a smile. The woman nodded at me and said, "You some kind of cop or something?"
"Something like that."
"He's the sheriff," Ian clarified. "I didn't think there were any of those around now."
"We're an endangered species," I replied, causing her to laugh.
"That's funny. You here for supplies?" Ian stuffed another donut into his mouth and nodded. He chewed it and tried to swallow the ball of dough, but something went wrong. His face contorted, and he stretched his neck out. Picking up his coffee, he poured it into his mouth and worked his jaw. After a moment, the mass managed to find its way down his neck. With watering eyes, he said,
"Damn, I better slow down. That one liked to have killed me."
"Good," Jamie replied, looking sideways at him as she swirled her cup. "Look," Ian replied, wiping his eyes. "I said I was sorry. It was a joke. Cut me a break."
"Mm-hmm."
"How are things around here?" I asked the woman.
"They're better now. The army is providing a lot of supplies. It's changed everything. We work here and can use our pay to buy other stuff."
"What do they pay you with? I can't imagine anyone taking dollars for anything. Where we come from, they're useless," I added. She smiled shyly and reached into a pocket and pulled out a silver dollar.
"Everyone uses these. They pay us with them, too."
"Well, that's good to know. It's real money, actually worth something." "What can you get with that?" Ian asked.
"A lot."
A devilish grin spread across her face. "You can buy about whatever you want." Her eyebrows bounced to convey just what she meant.
"You better find some silver dollars," Jamie said to Ian.
I reached into my vest and pulled out a gold maple leaf. Holding it up, I asked,
"What can I get for this?"
"Anything. And I do mean anything you want. Hell, you could buy a house with that."
"Why do you even have it?
No one has enough change for a trade with one of those." I shrugged and put it away.
"I had it before."
"Ooh," she said knowingly. "You're one of those survivalists."
"Something like that."
She looked at her watch and said, "Well, I have to get back to work. It was nice talking to you." I waved at her.
"Nice meeting you too."
She then looked at Ian and smiled. "Try not to kill yourself with those donuts." Ian just looked down at his cup, afraid to make eye contact with her, because Jamie was burning a hole through the woman's head.
"Nice chatting with you," he replied.
She didn't say anything to Jamie, and Jamie made no attempt to speak either. Once she was out the door, I said, "Well, that was fucking awkward." Looking back and forth at them, I added, "Why don't you two go somewhere and have makeup sex now? It'll make the ride back a lot less tense." I knew Jamie hated that kind of thing, and I was really, really hoping Ian would take the bait. But he just looked into his cup, even as Jamie stole a glance at him. "Fuck you, Morgan," Jamie replied, as she got up to refill her cup. Ian chanced a glance at her and said, "Come on, man, don't say shit like that." I laughed, rocking my head back as I did. "Look at your whipped ass." I didn't see Jamie was returning. I only realized something was up when I noticed Ian look past me, just as Jamie slapped me in the back of the head. "Mind your manners, asshole." Rubbing the back of my head, I laughed.
"Yes, ma'am," I replied.
We spent another couple of hours in the break room drinking coffee, as none of us could stomach another donut. At the moment, I couldn't face the thought of eating another one. Ian went to a corner of the room and stretched out on the floor to sleep. Jamie waited a little before finally joining. I smiled when she lay beside him, and he put his arm around her. Since they were going to snooze, I pulled a chair over to the wall and rocked it onto its back legs, folded my arms over my chest, and dozed off. There is no way I would put myself in such a vulnerable position if the old man were around. But he wasn't, and I thought I was safe. Fat chance. I woke up when the chair slid out from under me. I was on my back before I opened my eyes. When I did, I was looking up at the old man and Dalton. Sarge was looking down, shaking his head. He held a coffee cup in one hand and a donut in the other. Dalton stood beside him with a donut on each finger, like a fat, doughy ring. Rubbing the back of my head as I got up, I said, "You really are an asshole."
"You make a shitty Indian, you know that?"
Sarge replied, still rubbing my head. I said, "What?"
"Can't sneak up on an Indian."
"I'm not a fucking Indian." Sarge laughed.
"I know you're not. Just told you."
Mike and Ted walked in, and Mike's eyes went wide when he saw Dalton with the pastries.
"Dude, I want one,"
Mike shouted. Dalton looked at the donuts and licked the one on his middle finger before extending it to Mike.
"You can have this one."
Mike didn't hesitate. He snatched it from Dalton's finger and stuffed the whole thing in his mouth.
"Try me again," he mumbled with a full mouth.
Meanwhile, Ted had fixed himself a cup of coffee and was leaning against the counter eating one himself. When Mike looked at him, he said,
"You could have just got one from the box."
Looking past Dalton and seeing the box, Mike pushed him out of the way and rushed it. He stuffed two into his mouth and started stuffing them in his dump pouch.
"What the hell do you want?"
I asked Sarge.
"Can you drive a tractor trailer?"
"Yeah, why?" He nodded.
"Good. You're going to drive a truck pulling a trailer. Come on, I'll take you over to it."
I nodded at the door into the warehouse and asked,
"What about this stuff?"
The old man pointed at Ian and Jamie sleeping in the corner and replied,
"They'll get it. Come on, we need to go get this truck."
I followed him out into the warehouse. The truck was being loaded and looked to be nearly to capacity. The trailer was also being loaded. I don't know how much of my Christmas list I was going to get, but it looked impressive enough. We went outside, and I was surprised to see a large armored vehicle with an enormous cannon sitting beside the Hummer. Doc was leaning against it, trying to keep out of the rain.
"What the hell is that?" I asked.
"That," Mike replied from behind me, "is a Striker M1128 mobile gun." He walked past me to the machine and hugged it, laying his head on it. "And she's all mine."
What the hell are we going to do with that thing? I asked.